Naomi than a Heather. She closed her eyes. Shit, she breathed. This was a bad idea. Perhaps, Brian said, surprising me by the admission. How about you tell me why you want to leave Saberton and why you are afraid they'll come after you? A mix of emotions crawled across her face, tight lines of anger, a lip curl of disgust. I can't deal with it anymore. What they're doing with your kind with zombies. A beat of silence while Brian processed that she knew about the zombies, which meant that she had to be in fairly deep with Saberton. I doubted that the info about zombies being totally real was handed out along with Christmas bonuses. And you're interested in sanctuary with us? A faintly dubious note crept into his voice for the first time. She opened her eyes, flicked her gaze toward me. I gave her an encouraging nod. Yes, she said. They'll kill me or take me back if they catch me. She paused. I don't want to go back. All right. How long do you suppose you have before they catch up with you? I was on my way out of town when Angel caught me. Her eyes went to the dashboard clock. Now, I don't know. Not long. The dread in her eyes deepened. I knew if Brian didn't agree to this, she was completely screwed. Nice move, Angel. I actually believed you were just paparazzi, Brian commented. I heard a rustling that I figured was him pulling on clothing. You played me pretty damn well today. Yeah, I did. She winced, but at the same time there was a teensy touch of triumph. Probably deservedly so, I decided, if she'd been able to put one over on him. I'll meet you in 20 minutes at the corner of Cottonwood Street and Main, he said to my relief. Come alone and unarmed, he continued. You will be searched. Thoroughly. No promises or guarantees. This is a meeting only, and I'll make a decision after that. Her shoulders straightened, and as I watched, it was as if all the previous desperation fell away. She knew damn well she might be walking into her death, but that was a far cry from being on the run. Understood, she said, voice stronger. I'll be there. She paused as if wanting to say so much more, but all she said was, Thank you. 20 minutes, Brian repeated, and hung up. I let out a breath. Hey, that sounds promising, right? I said. She continued to look down at the phone for a few more seconds before handing it back to me. It does. More than I had before. You'd better get going, I told her. It'll take you close to 20 minutes to get to that location, and the roads are really bad tonight with the rain. I dug through my purse and came up with a pen in the back of a receipt. Here's my number. I scrawled it onto the paper and handed it to her. Call me if you need anything, okay? She took it, and once again I watched her commit it to memory. Thanks. She gave me a small smile. Maybe I'll see you around sometime. I hope so, I said fervently. I glanced out the window. Rain's letting up. Let me get out of here so you can hit the road. Good luck. And with that, I snatched up Brian's card, ducked out of her car, shut the door, and raced to mine. Her headlights came on as she started the jeep. She didn't move for several seconds, and I had to wonder if she was actually going to go meet with Brian or if she'd head in the opposite direction. But then she pulled out and turned left onto the highway, heading toward Cottonwood and Maine, I sure hoped. I was half tempted to follow, but decided that would be going too far, and might make Brian really wonder as well, like maybe she was coercing me into vouching for her. Instead, I behaved, took a ride out of the parking lot, and headed toward home. Chapter 8 The rain came down again in a light but steady fall. I cranked up the defroster and prayed that it actually worked. Even cold air helped keep the window fog at bay, and I hated driving at night without decent visibility. My phone rang about 5 minutes later, the caller ID displaying a number I didn't know. I grabbed it off the console and thumbed the answer button. Hello? It's Heather. Someone's tailing me, she said, only the barest hint of stress in her voice. Just want you to know. Well, in case something bad happens, I'm going to call Brian. Son of a bitch. You're still headed south? I couldn't be all that far away. That's right. passing Picayune Street right now, she told me. I thought quickly as I drove, glad that my job required me to drive all over the damn place, which meant I knew a lot of back road shortcuts. Okay, I said as I hung a quick right. Take a left at Grover, and then another on Highway 1790. That'll get you headed back toward me. Got it, she said, still shockingly cool considering her situation. Let me call Brian, and then I'll call you back. With that, she hung up, and I took the opportunity to hit Marcus on the speed dial and put it on speakerphone. While it rang, I grabbed the cooler from behind my seat and snagged a smoothie from it. It didn't take a genius to know it would be a good idea to be tanked up on brains in case shit got crazy. As soon as I emptied that bottle, I grabbed the other one and downed it as well, muttering a few choice words as the call to Marcus went to voicemail. I hit the end call button since I had no idea what to tell him that would make sense in a message. The excess of brains in my system kicked in, and the world leaped into sharp focus around me, making it a lot easier to drive like a bat out of hell in the rainy dark. The phone rang as I took a sharp right turn onto Highway 1790. Heather's number again, I noted. I suppressed the twinge of disappointment that it wasn't Marcus. He was working tonight, so he was most likely out on call and couldn't answer his phone. I jabbed at the answer button, keeping it on speaker. Hey, where are you? I asked. Just turned onto 1790, she told me, a teensy bit more stress evident in her voice, though I detected an edge of excitement, too. This was her true personality. She probably knew damn well she might die tonight, but at least she was doing something. There are two cars following me now. Brian said to get off the road with you and barricade behind the cars until he can get someone to come help us out. I thought quickly. Okay, I'm coming toward you. Almost to the bridge over Bayou Zaire. I'll pull off the road right past that. Do you know how many people are in the cars? Only one in the first, I think, she replied. Don't know about the second. Oh, and I have my shotgun, so we're not going to be completely helpless. I have a shitty attitude, I offered. That's my best weapon. She chuckled. Sounds good. Okay. I'm gonna try and get some distance between me and my buddies. See you in a couple. And with that, she hung up. The rain picked up, forcing me to set my wipers to mega speed, and I yelled a curse as the right wiper blade flew off into the night. Thank God for the heightened senses of being overbrained. I floored the accelerator, but my poor little Honda shuddered so badly above 80 that I had to back off a bit for fear of dropping the engine out of the damn thing. Still, I managed to catch a bit of air when I went over the Bayou Zaire Bridge, noticing rather absently that the water was overflowing the banks, and came down with a cringe-inducing screech of undercarriage on pavement. I slammed on the brakes and pulled off the road in an impressive shower of gravel, then angled the car so that we could hopefully hunker down behind it and still have a view of the road. I thought about turning the lights off, but then realized the highway was so damn dark there was a good chance Heather wouldn't see me at all if I did. The only weapon I had, besides my general zombiness, was a baseball bat in my trunk that had been in there when I bought the stupid car. I'd never played any sort of sport that required it, but back before I was turned, I'd pulled it out a time or two when assholes thought the scrawny blonde chick was an easy target for harassment. I made quick work of digging it out from under the accumulation of crap back there, then shed my raincoat and stuffed it into the trunk. Yeah, staying dry was nice, but all those bright polka dots would make shooting me a bit too easy for the bad guys. As I slammed the lid closed, I saw headlights coming up the highway, and about half a minute later, Heather's Jeep skidded into an impressive bootlegger turn, sending up a spray of water as she pulled in right behind my car. She climbed out of the Jeep, shotgun tucked under one arm, as she fumbled a Bluetooth headset into her ear. "Sweet driving," I said. "Huh. That was 100% accidental," she confessed, eyes bright with adrenaline. "I about shit myself. Thought I was going to go into the bayou." Her gaze shifted to the highway. Two sets of headlights weren't far away. She glanced back to me and pointed to the headset. "I have Brian on the line." Gratification briefly lit her face at the fact that he was willing to provide help even before meeting with her. I was sure she knew damn well that it changed nothing as far as her eventual fate, but it was still cool to see. Or maybe Brian knows I'm involved and doesn't want me to get too fucked up because of her troubles. That was probably far more likely. I breathed deeply, taking in everything with my brain-fueled heightened awareness, the tang of adrenaline and nerves from Heather, the fetid odors of the swamp and bayou, the stench of rubber on pavement and the seared metal aroma of the cooling engines. Every drop of rain stood out in crisp detail. The roar of the approaching cars twined around me like harsh music. God almighty, I was ready for some action. Heather's mouth pursed as she looked toward the Saberton vehicles. I'm with Angel about 50 yards south of the Bayou Zaire Bridge, she said, and I fumbled mentally in confusion for a few seconds before realizing she was talking to Brian on her headset. No time to chat, sweetie, she continued. I'll leave the line open. I coughed to cover a laugh at the sweetie. The hard-faced Brian Archer didn't strike me as anyone's sweetie. I was liking this chick more and more. My grip on the bat tightened as I peered through the rain at the two cars. They came to a stop about 30 yards away on the opposite side of the road. One in the front car and two in the other, I told her. Can't tell yet if human or zombie, though. She slicked her wet hair back from her face with her splinted hand as we crouched behind the cover of the two cars. I'll bank on at least one of them falling into the not-human category. Well, this'll be fun, I said, eyes on the men exiting the cars. Did they have any idea who I was and that I was a zombie? No time to ponder that now. I dragged my attention back to the current fiasco. The shotgun under her arm looked like a 12-gauge. What ammo you got for that? I asked. Something better than birdshot, I hope. Heather put the shotgun to her shoulder. I have double-aught buckshot in here. Should do some damage, she said. Too bad someone broke my fucking hand, she added in a loud voice as if to be absolutely sure that Brian heard through the open line, forcing me to mask another laugh. But there was no undercurrent of malice or condemnation in her voice. Instead, her eyes were bright with an odd mix of humor and eager readiness. I sure hoped she survived this. This was someone who'd probably be fun as hell to go out drinking with. Not that I drank anymore, but, you know. The headlights of the other two cars went abruptly dark, and Heather muttered a curse. Our own headlights were angled away, and the steady rain added to the poor visibility. But my zombie vision picked up where normal vision left off. Two coming up on our right, I told her, voice low. One crossing the highway to the left. Looks like he's going to try to flank us. I glanced toward the bayou. Thank God the water's high. That'll make it tougher for him. I'll take whatever advantage we can get at this point, she muttered. The two coming at us have guns, I told her, hefting the bat. You put a couple of shots their way, and then I'll do my part. The words were barely out of my mouth when she fired the shotgun, and I nearly jumped out of my skin. Recovering after a stunned second, I leaped up from the crouch and vaulted over the hood of the car. As soon as my feet touched the ground, I broke into a dead run toward the oncoming men. The heavy sh-sh of Heather pumping the shotgun preceded another blast. A thrill of murderous satisfaction ran through me as one of the men gave a sharp cry of pain and clutched at his right leg. And then I was right on top of them. I swung hard at the injured one and managed to whack him solidly in the shoulder. Bones crunched and flesh yielded beneath my zombie-strength assault. He screamed and went down hard while I did my best to nail the other shooter on the backswing. The second guy wasn't a zombie either, but he was still fast enough to avoid the arc of my bat and get a shot off. Hot fire seared through my gut, with the sharp report of the gun echoing like an afterthought. God damn it! I yelled as I staggered back a step. Then I bared my teeth and brought the bat down hard on his arm. His gun clattered to the pavement as he gave a strangled cry of pain. I delivered a devastating blow to his knee, and he let out a harsh scream as he went down. The blast of the shotgun ripped through the air again, and a second later I heard Heather yell, "Zombie!" I spun in time to see her fire again. The man, zombie, loping toward her, staggered a bit in the second blast, but in the next breath he was on her and slammed her to the ground beneath him, her head thumping hard on the asphalt. Shit! I broke into a run, even as the zombie wrapped his hands in Heather's shirt and hauled her upright. She tried hard to swing a punch at him, but it was clear she was dazed from the head thump. I poured on the speed to get back to her. I didn't have training in anything resembling hand-to-hand fighting, but I'd been in enough scrapes and street fights to know that the will to win could turn the tide. I still had the bat in my right hand, and I made a charging swing to clock him in the back, right across the kidneys. He staggered and let out a roar of pain. It didn't drop him as I'd hoped it would, but he lost his grip on Heather. She tumbled back as he turned on me, his face twisted with fury and hands clenched into fists.
"Bat her up, motherfucker," I cried out as I swung again, this time at his head.
Unfortunately, even injured, he still had a fair amount of speed. He moved inside my swing, grabbed my arm, and took me down to the ground in a foot sweep thing that probably would have been cool as hell if I hadn't been on the receiving end of it. Twisting frantically, I slammed my booted foot into the side of his knee, which put him off balance enough that when I swung the bat at his other knee, the blow sent him to the ground. He had some serious fight skills and was on me in a heartbeat, but I had a black belt and dirty fighting bitch. Heather had scored a direct hit on him with the shotgun, and holes peppered his torso. Snarling, I forced my hand into a wound in his midsection, widening the hole more, then curled my fingers around anything I could and yanked hard.
"God damn it,"
he roared, as I did my best to pull Zombie Dude's insides out through the hole. He grabbed my wrist and wrenched it hard, but I kept my grip tight on his insides and sunk my teeth into his forearm. I didn't have much skill, but I sure as hell had a lot of will. Unfortunately, Zombie Dude outweighed me by about 100 pounds and was a hell of a lot stronger. He pried my hand off whatever internal organ now dangled from his abdomen, then brought his fist down hard into my jaw. I felt and heard bone crunch. And even through the slightly dulled senses that came with burning through brains, it still hurt like a bitch and left me stunned. I tried to struggle and kick, but it was like fighting in fog while wrapped in a giant cotton ball. His eyes narrowed in satisfaction as he drew back his fist again. I thought he was simply going to beat my skull to a shattered pulp, but instead he reached into the small of his back, pulled a gun, and lifted it toward my head.
Well, crap.
I caught a flash of movement beside me, and in the next second, two things happened. The muzzle of the shotgun made contact with Zombie Dude's head, and that same head disappeared in a deafening blast of buckshot, blood, bone, and brains. The mostly headless zombie slumped heavily to the side. Ears ringing, I lay under him, sucking in air with heavy gasps. A moment later, I shoved him the rest of the way off me, then wiped clumps of flesh and brain from my face.
"Nice job," I said to Heather.
Or rather, I tried to say. Instead, all that came out was,
"Nice love."
"Oh yeah, jaw shattered." Heather swayed, frowned down at the ex-zombie with what looked like a trace of sadness.
"Brainstem," she croaked. "He was going to blow your brainstem."
Oh shit, that would have killed me for sure. I looked over at the zombie corpse. Killed me as dead as he was now. Heather drew a breath to speak, then jerked and let out a cry as blood sprayed from her left upper arm. I swung my gaze to the two men who I'd thought were out of action. Wrong. Heather dove behind the jeep and clutched at her bicep, looking far more pissed than frightened at being shot. Hungry and with breath rasping horribly, I grabbed the bat and staggered back to my feet, lip curling into a snarl as I lurched toward the two men. My head felt unbalanced with my jaw hanging at such a strange angle, and the wound in my gut still seeped blood, but I managed a shambling, inexorable progress toward my foes. The one with the leg full of buckshot and a crushed shoulder got another shot off in my direction, but I had to assume he missed, since I didn't feel the punch of lead through my flesh. The second one fumbled with his gun in a desperate attempt to unjam it, but his smashed right arm pretty much ensured failure. I lurched closer and raised the bat, focused on the one with the ready weapon.
"Drop gun or die,"
I managed to slur through the broken jaw, then jerked and nearly went down as a bullet smacked into my hip. Pain flared, and I swayed for a second, but the hip seemed to be willing to support my weight for a little while longer. With an animal growl, I willed myself to close the distance. A frisson of terror passed through the shooter's eyes right before my bat came down on his head. I didn't have the zombie superpower thing going on right now, but I sure as hell had the really pissed off bitch thing happening, and even a weakling like me could swing a baseball bat to good effect.
Got one rule,
I gurgled out as I brought the bat down on his head.
Shoot me, I eat you.
I dropped heavily to my knees as I smacked him one more time to split the skull open. Growling with a mix of hunger and fury, I grabbed a handful of warm and still pulsing brain from the shattered head and crammed it into my mouth. The other man stared at me in horror as he tried to scrabble away, his jammed gun clutched to his good hand. He froze as my eyes locked onto his. I gulped down the brains, and a few seconds later I felt my jaw shift back into place.
Drop the fucking gun,
I said, voice an ugly rasp,
or you'll be my goddamn dessert.
He went utterly still, eyes flicking from the gobbets of brains dripping from my fingers to the blood around my mouth to his oh-so-very-dead buddy. He tossed the gun away from him, eyes wide in shock and revulsion. I gave him a slow smile, well aware that it was full of gore. Yeah, that's more like it. Without taking my eyes from his, I scooped another handful of brain from his partner's skull and stuffed it into my mouth.
God damn, but there was nothing better tasting in the whole damn world than warm brain when you were shot the hell up. Like a cold beer after a long hot day of working in the yard.
I scraped out more of the dude's brain, shuddering in relief as everything knit itself back together and normal sensation returned. The rain chose this moment to finally let up, and a chorus of frogs raised their voices as if to celebrate the brief interlude. The harsh breathing of the living man cut through the drip of water and croak of frogs in a strange harmony. I ran my fingers around the interior of the skull, getting the last few clumps of brain matter, and sucked them from my fingers like icing from a mixing bowl. Desperately not wanting to wipe my mouth, I straightened and moved to the surviving gunman, crouched and did a quick pat down to make sure he didn't have another gun on him. No weapons, but I did find a pack of cigarettes and a lighter in a shirt pocket. Grinning down at him, I pulled a cigarette out, stuck it between my bloody lips, and lit it. Even allowed myself one sweet drag, just one. Didn't want to waste too many brains. But damn, the moment called for it. I was reformed, but I'd never be perfect, and that was okay with me. Cigarette still in my mouth, I grabbed the front of his shirt and dragged him back toward Heather. He let out a strangled scream as his shattered knee twisted, but I had no trouble ignoring it. Heather was sitting on the wet ground, leaning up against the tire of her Jeep. At first I thought she was muttering to herself until I realized she was still on the phone with Brian. At least I assumed it was Brian. If he'd been listening the whole time, he'd sure as hell gotten an earful. Her face was pale, and blood ran in a slow rivulet down her left arm. Rain-diluted blood dripped from the wet hair behind her ear, probably from when she whacked the back of her head on the pavement when Zombie Dude tackled her. I dumped the Saberton guy on the ground and gave him a hard look as I flicked the cigarette into a nearby puddle. You can try to escape or cause trouble if you want, I told him. But when I catch you, I'm eating you. Understand? He gulped and jerked his head in a stiff nod. I considered him for a moment, then bent and tore his shirt from him before turning back to Heather. How bad is it? I asked as I crouched and wound the torn shirt around her arm in an effort to stop the bleeding.
I'm okay. Just cold, she murmured, but she looked like she was having trouble focusing on me.
Snorting, I tugged the headset from her ear and stuck it in my own. Hey, Brian, it's Angel. You got anyone coming? We need help, and calling 911 is probably a bad idea.
Yes, ma'am. Two cars will be there in about a minute or so, he calmly informed me. How are you?
I'm good for now, I told him. I stopped for a bit of a snack. Heather blasted a zombie in the head with her shotgun. She's hit in the arm, got a hard bump on the head, and she says she's cold, may have a concussion. And I need to go pull a corpse off the road. Oh, and I got a live one, too. Don't know if you want him or not.
Most definitely, he stated, approval in his voice.
I tied off the crude bandage on Heather's arm and gave her a wink and smile, then moved back over to my former dinner.
I see headlights, I said to Brian as I grabbed the corpse's arm and pulled him off the road. Sure hope they're yours. I don't have time to have this much carnage.
Jeez. Two mostly headless corpses, a shirtless guy with a smashed arm and knee, one injured woman and another with bullet holes in her clothing and blood dribbling down her chin, along with various spent casings and shotgun shells. No, nothing at all suspicious here.
First one should be approaching now, Brian replied to my relief. Still, I hurried to pull the corpses and my prisoner behind the cars so that it wasn't quite so obvious that we'd had a little mayhem party here. Relentless hunger set in as I finished. Not unmanageable, but damn insistent. The one brain had barely been enough to put me back together, and I'd burned up plenty doing my sprint and whack-a-guy bit. I picked up the baseball bat as the black SUV pulled off the road about 30 feet from where I stood. A black woman in dark pants and shirt climbed out of the car, gun in hand. She swept her gaze over the area in an obvious assessment, then headed my way.
Okay, I said to Brian. Someone's here, a woman, tall and black with really awesome braids, and she's not shooting at me, so I'm thinking this is one of yours?
That would be Rachel, Brian said. Dan should be there in another minute or so.
Gotcha, I said, keeping my eyes on the approaching woman. What about Heather? She needs help.
We'll take care of her, ma'am, Brian replied.
I scowled. That could be interpreted several ways.
Take good care of her, I ordered. I understand your meaning, he said. Angel, Mr. Ivanov requests that you not talk about this incident with anyone until deeper investigation is done. Saberton Corporation doesn't play around.
I was tempted to give him the same noncommittal, I understand your meaning, that he'd given me, but instead I said, okay, got it.
I didn't mind an excuse to put off telling Marcus for a while.
I handed the headset back to Heather. She gave me a vague smile and simply held it loosely in her hand instead of putting it back in her ear.
Miss Crawford, the woman said as she held a brain packet out to me. I'm Rachel. Mr. Archer sent me.
Oh, thanks, I said in thinly veiled relief, then had to hide a surprised start when I realized I couldn't smell her brain. She's a zombie, too. I quickly tore the packet open and gulped down the contents, mentally rolling my eyes at my reaction. Of course Pietro's security people would be zombies, duh. Still, it was cool to finally meet another zombie chick. Rachel crouched by Heather, looking her over and asking questions like, do you know what day it is and who's the president? She glanced back up at me as I finished the packet.
Need another.
Her cool regard flicked over the obvious bullet holes in my clothing.
I won't say no if you have a spare, I told her.
She silently pulled another from her pocket and handed it to me, then slipped her arms beneath Heather and stood, lifting her easily with zombie strength. Yet another SUV pulled up, and a man in a dark sweatsuit who I assumed was Dan stepped out. He gave a nod to Rachel as she carried Heather to her SUV, then looked to me.
Mr. Archer advised one dead zombie, one dead human, two prisoners. Anything else?
Two prisoners? Shit. Of course. Heather would be a prisoner as well. I grimaced as the rain began in earnest again.
Well, at least it'll wash the blood away.
No, I think that covers it.
Dan gave a crisp nod, close-cropped sandy hair giving him that security dude look. He was only a few inches taller than me, though, which translated to pretty damn short for a guy. But he was wiry and moved with confident ease.
We'll finish the cleanup here, then, he said. Thanks for the help.
It wasn't a dismissal, but it was obvious there wasn't much more I could do here. Besides, I was soaked to the skin, and my shirt and pants were full of bullet holes. Looks like I'll be breaking out the mending kit, I thought with a sigh. No way was I going to throw them out simply because I got shot. Since I seemed to have turned into a bullet magnet, that would get expensive fast.
Y'all will let me know about Heather? I asked Dan.
I'll make sure someone does,
he said with such conviction that I couldn't help but believe him.
Okay, then. Well, it was nice meeting you, I said.
He smiled.
Be careful getting home.
Then he turned away to take care of the mess we'd made.
Chapter 9. It was only a little after 1 a.m., which seemed weird. So much had happened since I left the morgue at midnight, it felt like it should be at least 4 a.m. But apparently a psychotic firefight and zombie fest only took about 30 minutes from start to finish. The entire way home, I struggled to come up with a story that would explain the pesky bullet holes in my clothing in case my dad was home and still awake. My pants and corners off his shirt were both dark, which meant that the blood didn't show, but after getting shot and beat up and then shot some more in the pouring rain, I was looking pretty damn bedraggled. But then my dad wasn't even home. That made hiding the fact that I'd been shot a whole lot easier. But it annoyed me anyway because, damn it, why the hell wasn't he home? All too easy answer. He was out drinking. I shoved my wet clothes into the washing machine, dumped a bunch of other laundry in on top of them, then got the load started. With that taken care of, I took a quick shower to get the mud, blood, and other grime off, then tugged on a t-shirt and fresh undies and climbed into bed. But once there, I lay awake, listening to the washing machine churn as though it mimicked the agitation of my own thoughts. 6 months ago, I'd been kidnapped for zombie research and learned that some people didn't have a whole lot of respect for zombies. Based on that experience, I thought I knew how high the stakes were for my kind. But apparently, they were a shitload higher, enough so that Saberton was willing to hunt Heather down to either kill or capture her simply because she wanted to leave them. At least I sure hoped that was the real story. As much as I already liked her, I knew there was always a chance that this whole thing was a ploy to infiltrate Pietro's organization. The washing machine finished its cycle with a clunk. Silence ticked through the house, but about a minute later, I heard the front door open and shut quietly. Paranoia gripped me. What if it wasn't my dad? What if the Saberton people knew where I lived and were coming after me? My heart thudded while I ran through the escape scenarios in my head. Out the window would be easiest, then run like hell. No, grab a bottle of brains first. Except that my fridge is locked and... A muffled curse that was clearly my dad's voice effectively banished my paranoia. Relieved on a number of levels, I listened to his low muttering as he rummaged through the kitchen cabinets. Then a few minutes later, I heard him go down the hall and open the washing machine. More muttering, then the sound of him transferring my laundry to the dryer, followed by the thumps and creaks of my dad putting a load into the washer and starting both machines. Mystified about why he felt the need to run a load in the middle of the night, I remained silent, listening hard, but he did nothing more than go to his own room and shut the door. I finally fell asleep, lulled by the comfortably familiar vibration of the ancient washer and dryer, despite the worries that crowded in my head.
"You have a maggot on your sleeve," Darrell murmured.
Sighing, I flicked it off, watched it sail through the air to land on the wood-paneled wall and slide down to the dull gray carpet. My day had begun with a pickup from the hospital, then a hospice death, which we only worked because the family was arguing about which funeral home to use. The scene we were on now would normally have been a somewhat ordinary suicide of a terminally ill man, advanced pancreatic cancer. He'd written a careful email to his family explaining his decision and expressing his love for them and detailing his wishes for disposition of his body and funeral arrangements. But in a cruel twist of fate, he'd mistyped the email address, and the family never received it. He wasn't discovered until 2 weeks after he overdosed on pain meds, by which time he was a yucky, maggot-covered mess, which made it impossible to fulfill his desire to have his body donated to science. Poor dude. Couldn't even have this fucked-up illness be good for something. I brought him back to the morgue and got him logged in and stored in the cooler. Dr. LeBlanc informed me that he had court and wasn't going to perform any autopsies until the next day, which meant I had nothing to do except wait for another call. The last thing I wanted was time to reflect and think or anything like that. I didn't want to muse on the incidents of the previous night or contemplate how right or wrong it was for me to kill and eat that Saberton man. I needed to stay busy, and, annoyingly, not enough people were dying to keep me so. Restless, I went up to the front office and scored points with Rebecca, the secretary, by helping her with filing. That only killed about 2 hours, and so I went back to the morgue and organized the supply cabinet, made notes of what needed to be ordered, and did, essentially, every minor and or crap job that tended to be put off or avoided. The grime on the baseboards of the cutting room had been bugging me for a while, and I was down on my knees scrubbing them when I heard the cooler door open. Frowning, I straightened. Nick, I called. Is that you? I didn't think he was scheduled to work today, but who else would be going into the cooler? After a few seconds of no answer, I stood and moved through the cutting room into the hallway. The cooler door stood open, and when I stepped into the doorway, I saw Alan, hands gloved, standing over a body bag on one of the stretchers. The bag was unzipped, and he appeared to be searching through it. A stab of apprehension went through me. This was the body I'd picked up from the hospital, and it hadn't been autopsied yet. But what if someone at one of the funeral homes had mentioned that brains were missing from the bags of organs? I'd never thought it likely that any non-zombie would notice whether brains were missing or not. After all, no normal human in their right mind would look through the bag of innards to verify that everything was there. Alan? He glanced over at me, eyes flicking to the rag and scrubber in my gloved hands.
Dr. LeBlanc has you doing something useful.
I bristled, but did my best to hold on to my outward cool. Alan didn't like me, and I didn't like him, and that was that. No, I decided to do it on my own, I said. The baseboards have been bugging me. He gave a snort of what might have been either contempt or disbelief.
Good that you're doing it. No one else would, he said, with the clear implication that no one else would lower themselves to crawl around the cutting room floor.
He continued to dig through the bag and around the body.
Saves us from having to call in a cleaning crew, he added.
Yeah, well, I'm all around useful, I said, biting back a more inappropriate response.
Job security for now, I suppose.
He closed the bag and turned to the one behind him, the maggoty and somewhat decomposed suicide from earlier today. I watched on edge. The autopsied one, the movie extra from yesterday whose brain I'd already harvested, was on the shelf to his right. I couldn't stand it anymore. What are you doing? I asked, frowning.
When things don't end up where they're supposed to be, it's my job to make sure it's not a reoccurring problem.
He unzipped the bag and began to check the dead guy's hands and wrists, ignoring the maggots.
Yesterday, there was an issue over a wedding ring that wasn't included in the property of a decedent. It had somehow been left loose in the body bag. The family was not amused.
My frown deepened. I always inventory the property.
Hell, it had been my meticulous property inventory procedure that helped me figure out that Dr. Cherish was up to some hinky shit late last year. This was on Jarrett's shift, Alan explained, checking the neck and ears of the maggot-covered body. Haven't caught you yet with any faults in that area.
There was no mistaking the emphasis on yet. And you won't, I replied stubbornly. I have a system I use to make sure I catch all the valuables. Alan looked over at me, lips pressed into a thin line.
I'm not asking for your system or your proclamation of perfection.
He returned his attention to the bag, continuing to check the decomposing body for valuables that I'd already removed.
I'll be doing spot checks, and if everything is where it's supposed to be, you've got nothing to worry about.
Right, I said. I got nothing to worry about. Probably good that he didn't ask me what my system was, since it was a slightly altered version of the children's song, Head, Shoulders, Knees, and Toes, that I hummed to myself while going over bodies. My heart continued to thump as I watched him search the bag. I knew if I continued to stand here, it would look weird and suspicious. And what if he decided he wanted to check the non-existent wound on my hand? I still had a gauze bandage over the spot, but there was nothing but smooth skin beneath it. I forced myself to casually turn around and return to the cutting room. My palms were sweating within the gloves, but I didn't change them, simply returned to scrubbing the baseboards, and didn't dare to relax until I finally heard the cooler door close and Alan's footsteps heading toward the main building. He hadn't found anything out of place, at least I assumed not. He wasn't the sort to put off chewing me out if he caught me screwing up. But what the hell would I say if he ever did find out I was stealing brains from the bags? It wouldn't end well. I knew that in my zombified bones. And I had a sick feeling it was only a matter of time before Alan or somebody else discovered my horrific larceny. I gave the sponge a savage twist, wringing it nearly dry, and resumed my scrubbing. If only my unease and worry could be cleaned away as easily as the grime.
Chapter 10.
The minute my shift ended, I got the hell out of there. I wasn't in an I-need-pie mood, and I sure as hell didn't want to go home yet. So instead I drove somewhat aimlessly for about an hour and scowled at people who didn't know how to drive in the rain. I thought about trying to call Marcus again, but I wasn't sure I wanted to tell him about Alan and his bullshit insinuations that I was a fuck-up waiting to happen. Not to mention my fears that Alan would find out about the missing brains, and I'd not only get fired but be without my food source. Marcus would get mad on my behalf, which was all right, but then he'd start giving me suggestions of how to handle it and what to do. And I didn't want any of that. Sometimes all a person needed was to vent and bitch without having to endure advice, which would only serve to drive home the fact that it was a horrible situation. I already knew what I was supposed to do. Keep my nose clean. Cover my tracks. Don't give Alan any reason to write me up. Be positive and all that crap. Problem was, I'd been doing that. I actually liked my job and had no issue going the extra mile and so on. I showed up early and left late, most of the time at least. But all of that wouldn't save me if Alan found out about the brains. And it wasn't as if I could simply stop taking them from the bags, not without dipping heavily into my stash. Less than 24 hours earlier, I'd charged two gunmen to help save Heather's life. And now a stupid encounter at work had me worried. I might lose my source of brains at any time. Fuck my life. I finally drove out to the Tucker Point public boat launch and parked, dismayed to see that the water was well over the dock. Another foot and the whole parking lot would be flooded, which means they'll almost certainly open the spillway soon. I was 7 years old the last time the spillway was opened. Mom and Dad and I had gone down to the edge of the bayou that ran behind our house and watched in awe as the normally placid coal bayou became a churning rush of mud-brown water. But then the water levels had crept up until the road to our house had several inches of overflowing bayou on it, and I got to listen to my dad bitch and moan about people driving too fast through the water and sending waves lapping over our bottom step. Fond childhood memories, to be sure. However, right now the high water on the Krieger River ensured that no one was using the boat launch, which meant it was a perfect place for me to chill and get my head back on straight, or at least to get to the point where I wasn't about to throw something. Exhaling a gusty sigh, I leaned my seat back and gazed up at the worn headliner of my car. Too damn much going on. 3 more days until the damn GED, a pain-in-the-ass boss, the usual angst and uncertainty about Marcus, my dad being his typical ornery self, the bizarre situation with Heather, Saberton's connection with both Philip and Dr. Cherish, as well as their disturbing interest in Pietro and others associated with him, including me. It was a lot to think about and process, but it was that last item that had me frowning the most. Heather had known Kang, been good friends with him even, and Kang and Sophia had been up to something with her fake brains research that caught Saberton's interest. Sophia was dead and gone, but Kang might have some answers. Pietro had Kang's head and was supposedly trying to regrow it, or rather, he had his people trying to regrow it. Did he really? Or was that just a line of bullshit to string me along? I wouldn't put it past him. I glanced at my watch. 5:32. Still early enough to make a civilized phone call to Pietro. Rain began to patter my windshield again as I brought the back of my seat upright and reached for my purse to get my phone. Movement flickered to my left, followed by a startling crash and a shower of broken glass as my side window shattered. I let out a scream and instinctively threw my arms up to shield my face, even as a hand reached through the busted window to hit the unlock button. Before I could react, my attacker yanked the door open, fisted his hand in my hair, close to my scalp, and dragged me from the seat and onto the wet gravel of the parking lot. I screamed again, this time in pain, and clutched at the hand in my hair. Let me go!
Been through this before,
my attacker said. Philip. My blood ran cold, and I jerked my gaze up to his face.
But Archer's not here to save you this time, darling.
He continued, voice slightly raspy but with a harsh, uncompromising undertone. Terror sliced through me as he dragged me further away from the car. I struggled harder, kicking and clawing for all I was worth.
Belle,
Philip growled at another man as he tightened the grip in my hair. One glance told me this was the other zombie from the gala, Tim, the crooked-nosed one who'd bitten me.
Get her goddamn legs.
Tim Bell. Great. Well, at least I had the full name of one of my attackers. Didn't do me much good right now, though. Tim made a grab for my legs, but the rain helped me squirm out of his grasp. I kicked savagely at him and landed the heel of my boot solidly in his chest, forcing him to stagger back a step. Philip locked his other hand around my upper left arm while I filled my lungs and let out a scream. Sure, I'd picked the most isolated spot I could think of to do my mopey navel gazing, but there was still a tiny chance someone would hear, so I had to at least try. Philip snarled and shoved me to my back on the ground with a grip on my arm and hair. Tim got hold of my right ankle, and I let out another scream while I struggled and twisted and kicked and clawed like a crazy bitch.
With the way the two men were handling me, any onlooker would think they were trying to rape me. But of all the possible threats to me right now, I doubted rape was one of them.
Another man stood a few feet away, holding what looked like a walkie-talkie in one hand while he calmly watched the two zombies attempt to subdue me for whatever the hell reason. Light-eyed, balding, and non-zombie, noted a part of me that wasn't fighting for my life, the hungry part that locked on to the closest source of edible brain. The extreme exertion was burning through my brain reserves fast, but with Philip involved, I knew this had to be a Saberton Corp operation, and I didn't dare let up. Tim got hold of my other ankle and made a move to straddle my legs, which I thwarted with a violent thrashing. Twisting, I tried to sink my teeth into Philip's arm, but he shifted away before I could do more than graze his skin. He abruptly released my hair, but the instant of relief vanished as he shoved his hand into the center of my chest and pressed down hard.
No one to hear you, Philip said in a hard, cold voice.
I fought to get a full breath, continued to punch at him, but he was smart enough to keep his head pulled back from my crazy, desperate flailing. In my peripheral vision, I saw the Saberton guy pull a gun, but getting shot seemed like a minor threat compared to other possibilities, like becoming Cherish's zombie guinea pig again. That blood-chilling thought inspired a whole new wave of desperate thrashing. Philip's breath hissed noisily through his teeth as he did his best to pin me down.
This is going to happen,
he told me, lip curling.
It'll be a lot easier on you if you cooperate. I can go either way.
I'm not gonna just let you take me, I gasped out. Squirming, I managed to get a leg free and landed a hard kick in Tim's face. He bellowed a curse, then threw himself bodily across my legs. I punched again at Philip, but didn't have much power behind it. Growing fatigue weakened my efforts, and the hunger tightened its hold on me. Even as a zombie, I could only maintain this level of resistance for so long. Beside me, the Saberton man scowled and switched to a different gun. Philip saw it, shot a quelling look at the man.
Do not trank her yet,
he snarled.
You'll ruin it.
Ruin it? Yet? I fought back a sob of frustration as my struggles grew less and less effective. The two zombies simply had to let me tire myself out, and then they'd be able to do whatever the hell they wanted. Philip shifted to straddle my chest, put his knees heavily on my shoulders and sat back, pinning me solidly. With Tim on my legs and Philip anchoring me shoulder to hip, all I could do was flail my forearms. After a few seconds of that useless waste of energy, I lay still. Please don't, I gasped, a sob of frustration welling in my throat. I didn't know what the hell they had planned for me, only that it wasn't likely to be anything I'd find fun and relaxing. Didn't help that it was starting to rain harder, and I couldn't do anything to shield my face, like goddamn water torture.
It's going to happen,
Philip repeated.
Nothing you can do about it.
Though he'd been steady enough before, he'd obviously burned through some brains while wrestling with me, and the results weren't pretty, or normal. His head twitched violently to the side every few seconds, and I felt a tremor shake his whole body. He looked over at the Saberton guy.
It's clear. She can come in.
Saberton guy nodded.
Clear,
he said into his radio. I scrabbled again for a few more seconds, then gave up as I utterly failed to shift the two zombies even a bit, much less off of me. Breathing harshly, I felt my lips curl back in a snarl as I memorized the Saberton man's features, then shifted my attention to Philip. What's going on? Is this all you're good for, attacking women half your size? He gave me a cold smile.
Merely following orders, Angel.
Another heavy twitch jerked his head to the side.
I volunteered, remember?
Not your best life decision, I managed to sneer, pointedly following the abnormal head movement with my eyes. Even as I did so, my gut clenched at the evidence of pain in his eyes and the severity of the ugly twitching. A weird desire rose to help him, to ease his suffering. What the hell? Something flickered in his expression but was gone before I could identify it.
I'm not the one pinned on the ground, he retorted.
Asshole had a point. The scent of a tantalizingly delicious brain teased my nose, and I snapped my gaze to the left as a petite black woman carrying what looked like a tackle box and wearing a dark blue raincoat approached. My fear spiked again as I tried to determine what the hell these people were up to. She moved cautiously to my left side and knelt out of reach of my hand.
My heart gave a sick thud as she removed a rubber tourniquet thing from the box.
What's going on? I demanded, hearing the quaver in my voice. I shook my head and blinked to get the damn water out of my eyes. What are you doing? She didn't speak or meet my eyes, simply shifted to try and get the tourniquet on my upper arm. I struggled to twist my arm away, but the Saberton man grabbed my hand and pushed it down to the ground, then planted his foot directly on my upturned palm. I let out a strangled cry of pain, and he leveled a smirk at me. Obviously, he didn't mind using unnecessary force.
Hold still or he'll step harder,
Philip warned me, twitching erratically. I glared up at Philip. I despised his sorry ass, but the severity of his condition tweaked something inside me. It was like hearing a puppy crying for its mama, that sound that makes you want to pick it up and cuddle it and make it better. Except that Philip wasn't any sweet puppy, and the ludicrous concern for him that nagged at me made no sense. She really messed you up, didn't she? I said knowing damn well that he'd know that she was Dr. Cherish. He looked down at me, pain evident behind his eyes and in the lines of his face, and I had a feeling he had no idea how much it showed. Tremors, the extreme twitching, and what sure as hell looked like terrible pain, and that was only what I'd seen in our short encounters. Asshole or not, that was a crap thing to do to anyone. Fuck Cherish. Fuck that bitch. But Philip merely snorted.
Nothing that's not manageable.
I felt the woman's hands on me as she swiftly tied the tourniquet and palpated for a vein. I bit back a yelp as she shoved something that felt like the size of a ballpoint pen into my arm. Philip convulsed hard, his weight grinding the gravel into my back. I snapped my eyes back to his, focused, connected with his pain, with the wrongness in him.
A shuddering moan escaped him, though he clamped his lips tight to try to stop it.
With a soft exhalation, I bent my free arm, laid my hand on his hip, desperately seeking a way to comfort him, ease the pain. Beside me, I felt the woman drawing multiple vials of blood. A tiny, distant part of me knew I should be worried about what would happen to me once they got what they wanted. The same part that wondered if I was going batshit insane. I locked my attention onto Philip. Let me help you, I murmured, softly enough that he was the only one who could hear me. And I meant it. Batshit insane, the small part screamed. Philip leaned down so that his face was about an inch from mine, eyes intense and deadly serious. Rain dripped from his hair onto my cheek.
I'm only going to say this once, he said just as softly, so listen carefully.
I held his gaze, trembling very slightly in anticipation of something.
His lips pulled back from his teeth.
Fuck you,
he rasped, then straightened, a sardonic smile playing on his mouth. I clenched my teeth as my hatred for him flared white hot, totally burning away the irrational, compassionate bullshit. I began to struggle again. It still didn't do any good, and I couldn't sustain it for long, but it felt a hell of a lot more sane than the crazy urge to soothe my hateful asshole zombie kid. The woman removed the pipeline from my vein, and I shifted my I-hate-you gaze from Philip to her. She flicked a quick glance at me as she packed the vials of blood into the tackle box, but hurriedly looked away when she saw me glaring at her, then stood and moved back. In a total dick move, the Saberton dude ground my hand hard into the gravel before stepping off. I felt something break as he did, but managed to choke back any noise of pain.
It hurt like a bitch. But with all the energy I'd expended in my useless struggles, the brain starvation dulled my senses enough to take the worst edge off. I'd already memorized every line of his goddamn face. Let me find you in a dark alley, you worthless ass-tard. We'll see who's smirking then. He lifted the trank gun and pointed it at my thigh. I tensed, but Philip whipped his head around.
No,
he ordered, rasping his voice deepening.
Give me a goddamn dart so I can make sure it gets in her properly and doesn't leave as much trace.
Saberton dude only hesitated a second before passing a dart to him. I dared to allow a tiny bit of hope to flare. If he was worried about trace residue, then maybe I wasn't being kidnapped. Or maybe they're simply going to kill me outright. Philip made an adjustment to the dart, then pulled the back end of it off so that he was holding the vial part only. He looked down at me, slight sneer still curving his mouth.
Not, Angel,
he said, then poked me in the shoulder with the point. Within 3 seconds, my vision began to narrow, and his face blurred above me.
Worst kid ever,
I slurred, right before everything went black. Chapter 11. I woke with a headache, which was weird, since I hadn't had a true headache since becoming a zombie. But this was every inch of the real thing. Felt like I had a hangover, and I sure as hell never got those anymore either. I was sitting in the front seat of my car, driver's side window shattered, rain sheeting in on me. Memory trickled back, and I rubbed at my face, then gasped at the dull flare of pain from my left hand. Swallowing hard, I stared at abrasions and swelling, the odd lump that was most definitely a broken bone. Shakily, I pushed my sleeve up and peered at the crook of my elbow. Bruising there as well, and a large needle mark. Yeah. Definitely time to get freaked out. I shook my head to clear the lingering fog, regretting it instantly as the headache gave an answering throb. I should be hungry as hell right now, I thought. After fighting as hard as I did and being injured, I should be starving. I had been starving, but now registered only the faintest hint of brain hunger. Weird. A glance at the dashboard clock told me it had only been about 20 minutes since Philip shattered my window. After hurriedly scanning the parking lot to make sure I was alone, I started the car and peeled out in a spray of gravel. I knew I needed to call someone, but I wanted to get the hell away from this place first. The lingering dizziness faded a little as I drove, and I managed to reach the relative safety and civilization of the Walmart parking lot without running into anyone or breaking any major laws. I parked halfway out on the lot, where I had a clear line of sight all around me. Even though the Saberton bastards were likely through with me for the moment, I figured a little dose of healthy paranoia couldn't hurt. But right now, I needed to do something about the damn broken window. Plastic and duct tape would do the trick for now, which I knew Walmart had within. Then I could call Marcus and let him have the freak out I didn't have the energy for. However, when I climbed out of the car, a heavy wave of dizziness and fatigue nearly dropped me to the asphalt, forcing me to cling to the open door for support. Okay, maybe shopping isn't such a good idea since, you know, the whole swaying, drenched chick with a broken hand thing might freak some people out. Reluctantly giving up the shopping notion, I collapsed back into the seat with a swoosh of water and grating crunch of glass.
Too much effort to get out again and move around to the dry, clear passenger side, and too much effort to try to drive anymore.
What was the deal with the limp noodle feeling? That hadn't happened when I was tranked before. Well, I sure as hell didn't want to sit here until I felt better. I fished my phone out of my purse and dialed Marcus.
Hey, babe,
he answered, in a lazy drawl that usually made me melt. Marcus, I was attacked, I said, trying to keep my voice nice and calm, trying hard. Yeah, I'd been in a goddamn firefight just last night and handled myself like a boss, but that was a far cry from being dragged out of my car and held down. I wasn't a zombie superwoman, not yet at least.
Where are you?
He asked, all trace of the drawl gone, and I could almost see him snapping upright, freaking out in a manly way.
Are you all right?
Yeah, I feel kind of weird and shaky, but I'm okay, I said with as much steadiness as I could muster.
I'm in the Walmart parking lot right now.
Okay. Okay, good. He said, relief evident in his voice. What happened?
I had a bad day at work and went out to the boat launch to think, I said.